This is Cashing Out on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
It is hour number two of Cashing Out right here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Greg Oops Peterson holding it down tonight, and who is also holding it down? The Edmonton Oilers holding down home ice. We saw them be able to get the job done by a count of 4-3. That just went final just before midnight Eastern time. So we've got a lot to be able to decipher there. We do have ourselves a lot of good baseball for this Thursday as well. So we're going to be taking a look at those games as we've got 13 games in total on the diamond. Typically, when it comes to Thursday, you typically get fewer than 10 because you get a lot of getaway days and everything like that. So the fact that we've got this sort of baseball, especially after last week we had 5 games, this is very much a welcome sight. So we're going to be breaking down those games and so much more as we do have ourselves a lot that is going down, especially with game one of the NBA Finals. And we're going to be taking a look at that. And I do need to mention that with Wes Reynolds, who's going to be coming up a little bit later on the show, does great work here at VSiN. He's going to be breaking down everything on the golf front for this week as well. So that's something that certainly does need to be mentioned as you've got the OKC Thunder as very sizable favorites, as between 9 and 9.5 point favorites. So we'll be taking a look at things on that front. And something else that we need to take a look at and always have to give credit where it is due, everyone behind the scenes here at VSiN, that they do such an amazing job being able to give you all the content that you listen to, be able to watch all these shows that you enjoy, as you're able to catch us on the VSiN Watch app. You're able to catch us if you're listening on the radio front on SiriusXM channel 158. And the man that makes sure that everything is all crisp and clean with that audio, it is crisp. He does a tremendous job of making sure that everything is up to snuff on that front. And if you're watching on the TV front, because I do think that one of the most difficult tasks here at VSiN, making me look good in a TV/moving picture format, we've got Alexis, who does a tremendous job as our graphics operator. And additionally, I know that we've got Andrew, who does a tremendous job of making sure that everything's squared away with regards to the graphics, with regards to the odds that you see on the screen. They do absolutely amazing work. And then you've got the producers of this show. Jared, he does a tremendous job setting me up for success and helping me pronounce some of these crazy NHL names that we were getting in terms of the overtime session between the Oilers and the Florida Panthers. And additionally, Johnny, he was on site making sure that everything's all squared away. Big thanks to everyone behind the scenes. They are the best team in the business, and because they're the best, we need to do our best to be able to give you guys some great information, some great shows, and some winners. And we're able to get a winner with the Oilers by a count of 4-3 with Leon Draisaitl being able to score that final goal. Now, I will say, still think that there's good value on Sam Bennett to be able to win the Conn Smythe Trophy. He's now at 20-1. Prior to the series, you will find him more around about that 30-1 or so number. I think that the highest I saw was either 33 or 34-1. He had a pair of goals in this one for the Panthers. Says I think that's a little bit less of a, shall we say, given that Sergei Bobrovsky wins the Conn Smythe if the Florida Panthers does win the series, because you just saw the offensive attack that we saw from the Oilers here in game number one. And Draisaitl with that goal, he's now up to plus 450 in terms of the Conn Smythe odds. He was at 750 a little bit before. Now, I think that it's going to be hard to go against Connor McDavid with just the track record that he's had here in the postseason. And again, I mentioned this angle in hour number one with Connor McDavid, him winning the Conn Smythe Trophy last year, but his team losing the Stanley Cup, him having a lot of success, not celebrating out there on the ice because he actually lost the series itself. I think that there's going to be a lot of writers are going to be wanting to give him that moment, wanting him to be able to be embraced by the fans, what have you, whether that be out there in Edmonton or whether that be in Florida, if they do close out the series. So I do think that that's a solid look as well. And we've got ourselves some openers that are starting to come out in terms of game number two of the Cup Final. And it's relatively what we saw in game number one in terms of the money line, with right now the Edmonton Oilers find themselves in that neighborhood about a minus 120 to a minus 125 for the Panthers. You're going to find a very modest plus number. Right now at DraftKings, I'm seeing that opener at about a plus 105, but we have seen a little bit of a difference in the total. Most places open this total over at a 6 in terms of game number one and close it right around 6. We're starting to see 6.5 out there for game number two, as you did have a lot of, shall we say, very fast scoring in game number one, and then it really did die down a little bit late. But by the time it had died down too little too late, when you got 3 goals up on the board for both teams, you're going to be going over that total. And right now with the 6.5, they're very much shaded down to the under. You'll find that at about a minus 125, about a plus 105 with regards to this over. So certainly something that I'm going to be taking note of. And I do think that the right decision was made to go from a 6 to a 6.5, as this does appear to be a series that's going to be involving a lot of scoring, despite the fact that we saw some very, very good goaltending here in game number one. Now, I do have to have the question of, are we going to see some residuals of the just sort of wear and tear, for lack of a better term, that we saw here in game number one? Because this game went to overtime, and you had overtime finish up with mere seconds remaining on the clock before we were going to be getting a double overtime. So that's something that I'm going to be taking note of, and I do think that that actually does help out with the under just a skosh in game number two, because even though you're going to be having that off day on Thursday, still a relatively tight turnaround, less than 48 hours from the end of game number one into the beginning of game number two, as it is cashing out with myself, Greg Eubanks-Peterson, right here on Visa, the Sports Betting Network. And what else you want to be noting is the race for the Triple Crown that is happening right now out there in horse racing, and the Saturday big race is going to be the Belmont Stakes, the last of the Triple Crown races over at Saratoga, and you're able to get in on the action with our friends over at First Bet. They are able to play in all the events, and you're able to take a look at the VSiN Belmont Stakes Pick'em Challenge. You're able to enter your picks for Saturday's top races to be able to win great prices and up to a $500 wager credit over at First Bet. Head on over to VSiN.com/Belmont to play. That is VSIN.com/Belmont, as it is cashing out with myself, Greg Peterson, right here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. And how about if we decipher a little bit of baseball here, as well, as that's a little bit more of my main sport, and we do have ourselves a good card that we're going to be seeing on Thursday, and we do have ourselves a card on Thursday that is going to be featuring a double dip. You had a lot of weather that was affecting various places in the country. That's why you saw the Atlanta Braves and the Arizona Diamondbacks game finish up after 11 o'clock p.m. Eastern time, so that was another rough one for the Atlanta Braves. They lose that game by a count of 2-1, but that delayed them quite a bit. As a matter of fact, as I'm doing this live, it's at 11 o'clock Central Time, and still have the White Sox and the Detroit Tigers doing battle in the ninth inning out there. So those are going to be two sleepy teams with a game that's going to be going down in the daytime as well. So something to take note of there. And then you're going to have a daytime game between the San Diego Padres and the San Francisco Giants, still doing battle as I do this show. So you're going to have a lot of teams that might be experiencing some, shall we say, tiredness on Thursday. And these two teams, they're probably going to be tired when it's all said and done. How about if we do dive in on that doubleheader between the Kansas City Royals and the St. Louis Cardinals, as they got rained out on Wednesday. So that means that you've got a twin bill here for the Thursday. And I think that is very interesting how you take a look at these two games, as the early game is going to be Noah Cameron going for the Royals and Miles Michaelis on the bump for St. Louis. And now St. Louis, they're about a minus 125 to a minus 130 favorite, plus 110 to about a plus 115 is that number on Kansas City with a total of 8.5. If I can get anything north of plus 115, that is going to be my buy point on the Royals, as I just am a little bit more of a believer in this bullpen of the Royals. They've been a top 10 team with regards to their bullpen ERA. You've had Carlos Estevez along with Lucas Hersich be a really nice 1-2 punch in that bullpen, and then Steven Cruz has done a nice job of holding it down as well. Daniel Lynch has given you some relatively solid innings, and for the St. Louis Cardinals, this has been a unit that's been a little bit up and down with regards to that bullpen, as I do think that Ryan Helsley is one of the better closers you're going to find in all of baseball, but I also think that you've got a pair of pitcher contact guys that might be experiencing a little bit of regression for Cameron. As much as I think that he's got a lot of upside, his 110 ERA just does not seem sustainable. Right now, his fielding independent is well north of a 3.5 because he's only getting about 5.8 strikeouts per 9 innings, albeit he's done a nice job being able to keep the ball in the yard. He's keeping the walks down with fewer than 3 walks per 9 innings. But I also do think that Miles Michaelis is doing for a little bit of regression as well, because with Miles Michaelis, he's been posting up that ERA that is now sub 4. It's about a 3.90. Now, the fielding defense is a 3.54, but he allows a lot of general contact as well. Less than 6 strikeouts per 9 innings. He's actually way up with regards to his walks as well. It doesn't sound like a ton, but in that neighborhood, about 2.5 walks per 9 innings. So that's way up from his career numbers. Now, he's just been able to keep the ball in the yard for Miles Michaelis, giving up a half home run for 9 innings. And it does help when you're going against a Kansas City Royals lineup that has been in the bottom 5 of the big leagues in terms of runs per game. Vinny Pascantino has been relatively solid, 8 home runs, and he's given you a north of 250 batting average. Salvador Perez, when he's been out there, has just been an abject disaster, and you just expect a little bit more of Bobby Witt Jr. Witt Jr. is still doing a nice job getting on base with a north of 350 on base, but just 7 home runs this far this season. After last year, he was able to show some might with regards to that power, and then you got the likes of Drew Waters and company at the bottom of the lineup that they're able to get on base, but they're not supplying a lot of power, and that's been really the thing for the St. Louis Cardinals team as well. They've got plenty of guys that are able to get on base, but Lars Nootbaar, right now leading the way in terms of his home run power, 8 home runs this far this season, doing a solid job of being able to get on base as well. And Brandon Donovan, you want to talk about guys who are really getting on base, north of a 320 average as far this season. He has been absolutely remarkable. And then you've had someone like an Alec Burleson be able to step up, to be able to give you a little bit of something there, which is big because Wilson Contreras has just not been himself this season for the Cardinals. And bigger than that, Nolan Arenado hitting about a 230, less than 7 home runs out of him thus far this season. You just expect a little bit more from a guy that you pay so much money for. And for the St. Louis Cardinals, Kyle Leahy, Phil Matone have been relatively solid in that bullpen. But if I'm able to get a plus 115 or greater with the Royals on the money line, much like I was seeing yesterday, I'm going to be able to take a shot there. Would rather have an 8 over, because we were seeing some 8s when this game was pulled off the board. It's now up to 8.5 pretty much across the board. But that 8.5 still willing to go over, mainly because just have two guys that they give up a lot of contact in general. And then in terms of that game number two, you've got Cole Reagans going up against Matthew Liberatore. And right now for Liberatore and the Cardinals, about minus 112 to a minus 120 favorite in that neighborhood of even money to plus 105, that number on the Royals. And for Cole Reagans, typically I love backing him in this spot, especially with the fact that since he got to the Royals, his road ERA has actually been a little bit better than his home ERA. He's been able to fly the team 14 strikeouts per 9 innings, but did miss the last about 3 or so weeks on the injured list, so that causes you to have some concern as to what you're going to be able to get here in start number one. And I'm a big believer, unless if you see a price that you really, really like, I'm just not a guy that's willing to back these guys. Start number one coming off of the bullpen, or coming off of the injured list, as you're going to have a lot more bullpen pitching in this game as well. So that's a little bit of an issue. Liberatore has been rock solid, sub-3 fielding independent. So going to go Royals game one, Cardinals game two. I like both of those totals to the over as well. And coming up next, more baseball talk for this Thursday right here on Cashing Out on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
We're back here on Cashing Out on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Greg Oops Peterson holding it down tonight. And how about if we run the Midwest Special here, as we've got ourselves some great baseball action that's going to be happening on this Thursday. We've got 13 games in total. We looked at the double dip between the Royals and the Cardinals in the previous segment. And how about if we do dive in on what we're going to be getting in terms of Midwest on the baseball front, and then turn it forward to what we're going to be getting in the finals as well between the OKC Thunder and the Indiana Pacers. We'll get that in a few minutes. But first things first, you did see the Detroit Tigers be able to get the 5-4 win over the Chicago White Sox on Wednesday. And for the White Sox, they've been a whole heck of a lot better at home rather than on the road. And if you want a little bit of a mind-blowing stat, the White Sox have 6 wins on the road this far this season, with the Colorado Rockies 3-game win streak. They now have as many wins on the road as the Colorado Rockies. So that tells you how quickly things can change in baseball, as this is 909-910 on the betting board. And what else has been changing has been the fact that Sean Burke has been on a hot streak. He goes for the White Sox, and Casey Mize goes for Detroit. Right now, Detroit is a minus 210 to a minus 225 favorite. Anywhere between about a plus 180 to a plus 190 is that number on the Southsiders. And so this game is 8.5, shaded down to the under just a little bit. And I'm going to be willing to take a shot on the under, mainly because even though for the White Sox, you've gotten a few guys back at the fold, as Andrew Benintendi had been dealing with injuries towards the beginning part of the season, you're getting him back. Mike Tauchman is a guy that has dealt with some ailments as well. Getting him back in the lineup, I think, is very big for them, but still don't necessarily have a lot of power. Miguel Rojas is right now you've got Miguel Vargas right now leading the way with 8 home runs this season. You've actually had Josh Rojas be a big, giant disappointment for this team, so that's been a bit of an issue for them. And obviously, Luis Robert, even though he's able to steal bases for the Chicago White Sox team, and darn near every time he gets on, he's able to steal a base. Problem is, he doesn't get on consistently. He's hitting less than a 180 thus far this season and hasn't been able to supply a lot of power. So that's been a big issue for you. Now for the Detroit Tigers, are they going to have the better bullpen and the better starter in this game? Absolutely. As you've got Casey Mize, who's been posting up a sub-3 ERA. He's doing for a bit of regression. His fielding independent is more around about a 4. He's been getting only about 7 strikeouts per 9 innings. And for Casey Mize, he was the former number 1 overall pick, went through some major surgery, and he's been able to come back, and he's been able to look like a very rock-solid pitcher this far this season. But still, I do have to have a little bit of question mark and a little bit of concern with him, with the fact that he's given up 1.4 home runs per 9 innings, and he's still posting up this sub-3 ERA. So a little bit of suspectness there, as I was mentioning before. Still not necessarily the world's greatest swing and miss guy. And for the Detroit Tigers, what I do like about this team is the fact that you've been able to have a lot of offense for them really at the top. Kerry Carpenter has been able to now give you 13-plus home runs. He's coming off of a 3-home-run game. And then you've had Spencer Torkelson along with Riley Green both give you 13 to 14 home runs apiece. Torkelson is hovering in the neighborhood about a 350 in terms of that on base, so he's been able to do a nice job on that front end. For the Detroit Tigers, obviously, you're going to have the better bullpen. Like, with the Chicago White Sox, you're just not getting a lot of bang for your buck from these guys, like a Cam Boozer, who they were able to pick up from the Red Sox in the offseason. Mike Fasil's actually been a really good long reliever for the White Sox. He's been able to give you a sub-250 ERA, so I do like what he's been able to bring to the table. But guys, on a Mike Fasil, I've been having a little bit of a rough go of it in this bullpen for the Chicago White Sox. But that said, you've got so many guys in terms of the Tigers bullpen that you're able to mix and match with. It does lead me to the under here, even though I don't necessarily like their money line price, because I think that's gotten up a little bit too lofty. Got the likes of A. Wolves, Tommy Canley, you're able to throw in there as well. Brendan Hennepy will be able to give you a sub-325 ERA. So these guys have been able to do a nice job. And when you really need it, someone like a Brian Turner is able to be a little bit of a long guy. Has been used in the last 48 or so hours, so probably not going to be the case for him here. But you do have those options with regards to the Tigers team. You've got a lot of guys that they can go for one inning, they can go for two innings as well, so they do a nice job being a mix and match there. But that said, with regards to Sean Burke, even though he's got a fielding independent that's north of 5, his ERA is more around about a 4.25. He's been only giving you about 6 strikeouts per 9 innings. Walks has been a little bit higher as well. He has been able to round into form a little bit more. I think that he's going to be able to do a relatively solid job here, and a big reason why I also like the under is, keep in mind, you had a really long rain delay in terms of this Tigers versus White Sox game. Now you're having to play a relatively early afternoon game. I'm not going to say that it's as early as one that you're going to be finding out there in Atlanta, because that is one of those games that is going to be starting out very, very early. That is a 12:15 p.m. Eastern time, 9:15 a.m. Pacific time first pitch. But still, if you're looking at Central time, this one starts at 1:10. So still a little bit of a tight turnaround there. So I'm liking the under. And for the Chicago White Sox, did need to get a pretty good plus number to be able to take a shot there. Need at least plus 185. I am currently seeing a lot of plus 185, plus 190 or so. So that does allow me to be able to find some value there and take that money line. And what else you want to find value in is our betting splits. If you want to know where the money and the bets are really going, you want to get in on them right now. Unlike other sources where the betting splits, you don't necessarily know where they're coming from. You know where ours are coming from. Circa and DraftKings Sportsbook. That gives you information as to where the sharp action is landing, certainly with regards to Circa, because they're known for taking the big bets from professional bettors that are truly moving lines. Meanwhile, DraftKings is able to give you a nice broad market perspective, so that means that you're getting information on the real action and you're getting the best of both worlds. See the percentage of bets versus the percentage of handle on every single game across every major sport, helping you make smarter, more informed bets. You want to be able to get in on this, you go to VSiN.com/subscribe and you're able to get your first month for as low as $9.99. As it is Greg Oops Peterson holding it down right here on Cashing Out on Visa, the Sports Betting Network. And how about if we take a look at game number one of the NBA Finals? We have been building and crescendoing to this for a very long time, and I'm glad that we're going to be able to get this up and running. Right now for the OKC Thunder, they're 9.5-point favorites pretty much across the board. Total on this game in most places is a 231.5. I've seen one or two stray 230, 231s, but that said, right now seeing about a 230.5 in a lot of places. And with regards to this total, I default a little bit more to the under. I do think that for the OKC Thunder, this is a good enough defense, and it's going to be a little bit of a feel-it-out process. I recognize that the Indiana Pacers have been just so supreme with their offense, but that said, I do think that the OKC Thunder are going to be able to have some answers, and something that does have me concerned about the Indiana Pacers, it just got no rebounding whatsoever in that previous series out of Miles Turner. Miles Turner was very solid in that series against Cleveland Cavaliers. He was able to pull in there a bunch of boards, what have you. Previous series, that eroded on him just a little bit. Now, for the Indiana Pacers, obviously, you've got some very nice, versatile pieces. Tyrese Haliburton is able to impact the game in so many different ways, and Pascal Siakam has been able to average 20-plus points per contest all throughout the season. And I do think that when it comes to being able to gauge a prop market in a game like this, and just with how much you've got in general, a lot of people diving in on these props for the first time, because as we know, with regards to a final in any sport, whether that be the NHL, NBA, college basketball, what have you, then you're going to just attract a lot more, shall we say, bettors, and you're going to be able to attract a lot more action and headlines in general. But That said, I do think that you're going to be able to find quite a bit of value because you are going to be seeing a lot of these folks decide, oh, we're going to take the over on insert your favorite player here, and you're not going to be finding a lot of unders, that it's going to be able to lend itself to quite a bit of that value, like with Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. His player prop is about 34.5 in game number one, depending upon where you shop in terms of points. That's one that I'm certainly going to be willing to take a shot on the under on. Like I'm looking at DraftKings saying, you're able to get his 33.5 at right around about -110 to a -115. That's one that you do want to sign me up for. And I did mention it with Miles Turner. Right now, his player prop is 15 plus points over at DraftKings. I just can't get with it. I did not like what I saw from him in that previous series, and I do think that for Miles Turner, there's a chance that he might get a little bit outclassed by the OKC big man, as for OKC, we got really a big two for the team. Gilgeous-Alexander has been amazing, and then Jalen Williams, and I mean, with Jalen Williams, he has stepped up time and time again. I feel like this guy goes a little bit under the radar. Was a 20-plus point-per-game scorer during the regular season. He has just backed it up in so many different ways, whether it's by trying to be a triple-double machine, whether it's being a primary scorer another night. He's been able to do a nice job, give this team just great production in general, but the question becomes, what are you going to be able to get out of Lu Dort? What are you going to be able to get out of someone like an Alex Caruso? I think that those guys are so important with regards to the series, and I do think that these guys are going to be able to come through. Now, I just can't, in good faith, bring myself to laying 9.5 points with the OKC Thunder prior to the game. Now, in-game, I might be willing to do so, and that's something that I'm going to be diving in on, especially if the Pacers get down like double figures early. This has been a very resilient team. You know that by the fact that they have been pushed to overtime / regulation with 45 seconds or less remaining, being down 7 points in three separate series, and they've had a comeback in every single one of them. So they have been able to do a nice job on that front, and I do think that that lends yourself to having all the more value by being able to bet this in-game. Like, when it comes to being able to in-game bet, you're able to find some really good sort of just numbers that you're not going to be finding prior to the start of the game. You're able to see a little bit of the game flow as well. And I think that that's very big because for the Pacers and the OKC Thunder, these are a pair of teams that they haven't seen each other a lot because you've got East on West action here. And for the Indiana Pacers, I think that it's been a very magical run that they've been able to have. I think that it's going to be coming to an end. Now, I don't think that they get completely swept in this series because I do think that when they do return home to Indiana, they're going to be able to win at least one game. Might be able to win too. Like, I do think that that's completely on the table, but I do think that this is going to be a series where the OKC Thunder are going to be able to go out and they're going to be able to assert their will. I do think that the Thunder win this series in either 5 or 6 games. I can't really decide which, but that said, not going to be willing to lay this massive money line with them. I'm going to be looking a little bit more at an in-game opportunity. And coming up next, how about if we do dive in on what we're getting on the Thursday baseball front on Cashing Out on Visa, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome back to Cashing Out here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
This is Cashing Out right here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Greg Oops Peterson holding it down tonight, and we're certainly holding it down with some great baseball action. As a matter of fact, as I'm doing this show, we've got the New York Mets taking it to the LA Dodgers. Pete Alonso with a 3-run homer in the 8th inning, and we will see if he's going to be able to do that on Thursday, as well as you've got yourself an exciting conclusion between the New York Mets and the LA Dodgers. So how about if we dive in on this game with the Dodgers being a pretty sizable favorite, and I disagree with this number. This is 905, 906 on the card. The Dodgers are currently finding themselves between a -136 to a -148 favorite with Landon Knack on the mound and David Peterson. Great name. He is going to be going for the New York Mets, and right now the total is a 9.5, right around about -110 juice both ways with regards to that total. And for the Mets, you're going to be able to get them at north of a +120 number. I'm seeing as high as a +128 where I sit here at Circa, and I set my money line price at a +109. Now, because this number came out very, very late, I am not sure why, but this game was off the board for quite a while. Wasn't able to make this one of the write-up plays I've got on the VSiN website. That said, I do still think that you've got really good value with David Peterson, who's just really done a nice job of keeping the ball in the yard. A sub-270 ERA. I feel like Ben is more around about a 330, but he's getting about 8.5 strikeouts, fewer than 3 walks per 9 innings. He's given up 0.6 home runs per 9 innings as well. He, over the last few years, has really been able to mitigate the hard contact. That was one of the biggest issues they had early on in his career. Has always been a nice swing and miss guy. It's actually eroded a little bit over the last two seasons, but that said, he's been able to do just a supreme job in general of being able to hold things down, not get himself taken yard, and that's going to be big against an LA Dodgers team that this is quite literally the Death Star of all lineups when it comes to baseball, with Shohei Ohtani give you the 23 plus home runs that he is. He's been able to give you north of 375 on base, and Freddie Freeman along with Will Smith, both of these guys have been really good at just being able to find a way on as well. Both of these guys north of a 425 on base, but where you do go wrong with this LA Dodgers team is just all the pitching injuries. Like, you take a look at the bullpen, they still have not been able to get Michael Kopech out there on the field for the entirety of the season. Blake Treinen was out there for a little bit of time, but he landed on the injured list. You've got Kirby Yates on the injured list, and you've got Turner Scott out there on the field, but he's not necessarily been able to supply what you would expect. And for the Mets, they've got a big-time bullpen advantage. Like, I recognize that Jose Buto has not necessarily had the world's greatest ERA, but he's still able to give you some good innings and a relatively good long roll. Oscar Brazoben has been able to supply a sub-2 ERA. Reed Garrett has been solid, and this is a Mets team that does find themselves in the top 8 in the big leagues in terms of bullpen ERA, and I do think that that's going to be a big reason why you do get a little bit of an under here. I did something I told 9.4, and I do think that Landon Knack is going to start to come into his own a little bit more for the Dodgers. Now, he needs to cut down on the hard contact himself. He's getting about 8.5 strikeouts per 9 innings. Not amazing, but that's going to get the job done. His walks per 9 rate has been not great, not terrible, but the 1.8 home runs per 9 innings have certainly been hurting him, albeit he's been a little bit better over his last few starts, but certainly something that I take note of, especially with a Dodgers team that you're looking at guys like Jack Dreyer, Ben Casparis, who have been relatively good long guys to hold it down in the bullpen, but you don't have as many of those one-inning guys, and for Landon Knack, he is someone that I could see going only like 4, maybe 5 innings in this one. I think that he's going to get knocked around and he might be out a little bit early. And for the Mets, Pete Alonso, he has been absolutely tremendous for the team. Had a home run on Wednesday. And I do think that for Thursday, he's going to be able to provide you with quite a bit of boom as well. Additionally, you've been able to have Juan Soto be able to bust out a bit more. 3 home runs over the last 7 days, albeit 2 of them came against the Colorado Rockies. But you know what? There's a reason why you play all the teams on your schedule. And there's sometimes just some feel-good times in general. And I mentioned this when I was on with Adam Schein a few days ago as well. Sometimes you're just playing teams at the right time. And I do think that for the New York Mets, the series did come at a very good and proper time for them. Meanwhile, for the LA Dodgers, just still going through all those injuries. Like, I was talking about the bullpen issues, but I mean, you still have Blake Snell is currently out of the fold. You've had a lot of guys that you've had to mix and match with in general, so that's been a bit of an issue. Bobby Miller from a few seasons ago, I mean, that guy just has not been himself ever since all the injuries as well. So, circumstance where with a plus 110 or higher, I'm in on the Mets on the money line. I did set my total at a 9.4, so here at the 9.5, I'm going to be willing to dive in on the under as well. As this is Cashing Out with myself, Greg Oops Peterson, right here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. And what you want to cash out with as well is this really good package that you've got from Circa. Circa, they do such a great job of rolling out the red carpet for you whenever you come down to lovely Las Vegas, and they've got their all-in special that's running right now. That's where you get a 2-night stay for $400. This does include the resort fees and all the taxes as well, because trust me, out here in Las Vegas, they get you with those resort fees, so nice to see that those are not going to be factored in. But along with the 2-night stay for $400, you get a $100 dining credit, you get a $100 beverage credit, and additionally, you get a day bed over at Stadium Swim. So the perks really do pay for themselves. It's running all the way now through September 4th, so this is all summer long over at CircaLasVegas.com. That is CircaLasVegas.com. As Greg Oops Peterson is holding it down tonight right here on Cashing Out on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network, and we just took a look at one of the more marquee games of the day. You're going to be having the Mets versus Dodgers doing battle, and how about if we take a look at one of the, shall we say, not-so-marquee games of the day, as you've got yourself the Houston Astros going against the Pittsburgh Pirates. This is 9/21, 9/22 on the card, with it being Framber Valdez on the bump for the Astros, and Mitch Keller goes for Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh right around about a plus 136 to a plus 140 underdog. I'm seeing as bad as minus 155 with regards to this money line of the Houston Astros. I'm seeing it as high as about a minus 160. And total on this game, it is a 7.5, shaded up a little bit to the over. And I'm going to be willing to take a shot on that over. You've had a guy, Mitch Keller, has been able to do a very good job of keeping the ball in the yard, but he is way down with his swing and miss stuff. fewer than 7.5 strikeouts per 9 innings. Now, I will say this for Mitch Keller. Throughout his career, he's got an ERA that's darn near a point better when he's at home rather than on the road. His ERA actually goes up to north of 5 when he's away from home. And has always been a pitcher that's done a nice job being able to mitigate hard contact between 0.6 to 0.7 home runs per 9 innings for his career when he is at home. But still, a guy that I do think that he just allows a little bit too much contact in general for the Astros to recognize that this has been a lineup that has had their issues throughout the season. But Jose Altuve appears to be rounding back into form. He's been able to give you 9 home runs after a rough start to the season. He's been able to give you a bit more. You've additionally been able to get a little bit in terms of moving the line out of Isak Paredes, north of 350 on base. He's up to a double-figure amount of homers. So, Yennier Diaz and a few of those guys towards the bottom of the lineup, they are leaving something to be desired. But for this Pittsburgh Pirates team, I want to talk about a team that's leaving a whole heck of a lot of something to be desired. These guys are pretty much last in the National League in terms of runs per game when they are at home, because with the Colorado Rockies, typically they lead the big leagues in terms of darn near every category with regards to their home and road splits. But at home, just because you do play at elevation, that does help them be able to avoid the cellar with that regard. But for the Pittsburgh Pirates, you've been able to get some relatively good production out of O'Neill Cruz, 12 home runs, nearly a 350 on base. Additionally, you've got Andrew McCutchen, who's up to about a 360 on base. So he's been able to do a very good job of just finding a way to be able to move line, get on base. But other than Cruz, you don't have a single player with north of 7 home runs on this team, as you've got Brian Reynolds, who has been able to give you 7 home runs, and he's hitting closer to about a 235 now, which is better than where he was a few weeks ago, but certainly it's been a rough season for him. And then you've got so many guys that you're trying to mix and match with towards the bottom lineup that are hitting at 220 or lower that it's made it darn near impossible for the Pirates to be able to generate runs, because it's a very top-heavy team right now. And for the Pittsburgh Pirates, bullpen has not necessarily been great. Colin Holderman, well, he's not going to be doing a lot of holdering moving forward because, well, he's currently on the injury list. And yes, hopefully you enjoyed the fact that I said holdering there. So you had to do the nice little play on words. You've had David Bednar, who, well, he's been not so great, not doing a great job of being able to put you to Bednar, feeling very good and safe north of a 4 ERA. Got a lot of fun names with regards to this Pirates bullpen. Joey Wentz, he's been posting up north of 4 ERA as well. But for the Astros, even though this has been a team that's experienced a little bit of regression with Brian King, he's still giving you about a sub-3.5 ERA, but we've seen a little bit of a rough go of it for him last week or two. You still have a pair of guys in Caleb Ort, who's been able to do a nice job, and then Stephen Okert, who's been able to give you a sub-3 ERA as well. Josh Hader is starting to look like the Josh Hader of old, and for the Astros, I do feel like they should be a pretty good size favorite here. I set them at a minus 146 on the money line. Right now, if you're looking at that run line, to lay a run out, if you're only getting a plus 105, I do think that you need to be getting a little bit more bang for your buck here. As I was looking at a run line of, if I were to take it, I would need a more around about a plus 115, plus 120 personally. But for the Pittsburgh Pirates, would like to see this money line get up to about a, shall we say, about plus 145, plus 150. Right now, we're just out there, so we're going to be deciphering what we get moving forward. But I do think that when it's all said and done, I think that we should see some steam here on the Astros, and that would put me on the Pirates' money line. And with regards to total, I do like the over semi-total at a 7.8. This is going to be one that we're going to start on this side and finish up on the flip side. This is 9-17, 9-18 on the card. The old Walker Texas Rangers are going to be on the road against the Tampa Bay Rays, with it being Ryan Pepiot on the bump for the Rays, and Jack Leiter goes for Texas. It's a total of 9, and with regards to this Tampa Bay Rays money line, between about minus 142 and minus 155 is what you're seeing there. The Texas Rangers pretty much across the board are plus 130, and for Texas, it's just been really rough in terms of this offense. As a matter of fact, they are currently your best under team in all baseball. North of two-thirds of Texas Rangers games, home, road, what have you, they have been really doing a nice job of hitting that under. Now, you've got a total of 9 here. It is going to be one that I'm going to be willing to dive in on the under on. I'm going to be willing to go back to that old reliable, and we'll be breaking that down along with more baseball for this Thursday on the flip side on Cashing Out on Visa, the Sports Betting Network.
VSIN, the Sports Betting Network.
And we are back here on Cashing Out on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network. Greg Oops Peterson holding it down tonight, and You were talking a little bit earlier, prior to going to break, about this Rays versus Texas Rangers game. One that I'm going to be willing to take a shot on, the under 4. And if you're looking specifically at the under rate of the Texas Rangers as far this season, as they've obviously been a really, really good home under team, but still, north of 67% of their games have went under the total overall this season, as currently they're up to 20 overs, 41 unders, and a push. It's been just wild what we've seen. And for the Texas Rangers, the pitching has been good. Like, the starting pitching especially has been great. The bullpen, right around about league average. Jacob Lyons is starting to give you some good innings out of that bullpen, and I've always liked Hobie Milner as a little bit of a long reliever, but I mean, the reason why you've got so many unders with the Texas Rangers team, just not a lot at the plate. Jake Berger, Marcus Semien, Jock Peterson, Adolis Garcia, all hitting at 220 or lower, all not really giving you a lot of power. 7 home runs or fewer out of all 4 of these guys. That's been very costly for the Rangers, and this is one of those teams that I just continue to think that they're going to hit at some point, but they just have not hit. Like, sometimes that just happens where you're just sitting like, all right, at some point we're going to see positive regression. At some point, they're going to be able to pick it up, and sometimes they just don't pick it up, and that's right now been the case for the Texas Rangers, so that has been intriguing to take a look at, to say the least. Meanwhile, for the Rays, they actually have picked it up with their hitting. You've got Jonathan Aranda, who's been able to give you a darn near 4 on base, and I do think that it's a big deal as well that you've got Jake Magnum off the injured list. Really liked him towards the beginning part of the season. He was posting up an ERA that, or he was posting up a batting average that was north of 300. Now he's been able to pick up right where he left off ever since coming off of the injured list. And additionally, you've been able to get a little bit more help from Junior Caminero, Brandon Lowe. Both of these guys have been able to give you a double-figure amount of homers this season, so these guys have stepped up in a big way. Could still use a little bit more out of Yandy Diaz and company, but speaking of that bullpen ERA of the Tampa Bay Rays, always one of the best that you're going to find in all of baseball. Even with Hunter Biggie currently being on the injured list, and that was Biggie because he has been able to be very solid in this bullpen. You still have the likes of Garrett Clevenger, Eric Orze, throwing their Pete Fairbanks, your main closer, and these guys have been able to mix and match for a bullpen that is currently fifth in the big leagues in terms of ERA at a 3.22. Meanwhile, for the Texas Rangers, you've got a few guys like Luke Jackson and company currently dealing with an ailment. I know that Chris Martin has been in and out of the bullpen as well, so that's been a bit costly for them, and do think that in the end, you're going to be able to find some fair value on Ryan Pepiot. Even though for Ryan Pepiot, the swing and miss stuff is down. Only about 7.5 strikeouts for 9 innings, but he's posting up an ERA that's hovering around about a 3.25. Fielding independent, it is closer to about a 4 because he's been giving up about 1.4, 1.5 home runs for 9 innings on top of not necessarily having a ton of swing and miss, but he's been able to do a better job with his command this year than he has in the past. And on the flip side, you got a guy in Jack Leiter. I do think that he's doing for quite a bit of regression. He's been giving up north of 4 walks per 9 innings, fewer than 7 strikeouts per 9. Now, ever since coming off the injured list, it feels like he's been able to round into form with every passing start. 3 runs or fewer allowed in each out of his last 4, but I do think that he's going to be had a little bit here. And again, I do like that bullpen of the Rays a little bit more as well. Right now, I put my money line at a minus 152. That would put me on the money line, but I'm right now seeing run lines more around about a plus 140, and I'm willing to take a shot on that run line. I do think that the Rays are going to be able to find a way to get the job done, get it done by multiple runs, so I'm going to be looking at that Rays run line, and I'm going to be in on this total under as well. And we're talking about a team out there in the great state of Florida right now. How about if we take a look at another team that's from the state of Florida, as they had themselves a whale of a game tonight. Game number 1 that does go to the Edmonton Oilers, so the Florida Panthers, they're going to be looking to bounce back, and they're going to be looking to be able to regroup again. I do think that was Sam Bennett. Him being able to get the 2 goals here on game number 1 on Wednesday, that's just so big for his Conn Smythe hopes, and obviously the losing team probably not going to be getting the Conn Smythe trophy this season, but that said, you do have yourselves a great series that I fully expect this one to be going at the minimum 6 games, if not the full 7. Edmonton, they held up on their own or their home ice in game number 1, and right now you're finding them as a similar favorite to what we saw in game number 1. Game number 1, there was a lot of like minus 120 or so with regards to that money line. Right now I'm seeing between minus 122 to a minus 130, so we've seen a little bit of tick up there, but the big tick up has been on the total. Total in game number 1, close at 6, open at 6. Now we're finding this one at a 6.5. Now you're going to be paying some juice if you're looking to go under at a minus 125, but I do think that it might be worth the squeeze with regards to that juice, just because with the game number 1 that we saw, that game going to overtime, I think that there's going to be a few residuals in terms of game number two, in terms of these guys being somewhat tired, and that game was mere seconds away from going to a second overtime as well, and who knows what happens when you get into overtime number two, overtime number three, and those are when the guys get super-duper tired. But still, they're not used to playing this much of an overtime session as well. So I think that that is very much something to take note of. And Sergei Bobrovsky, he was able to stand on his head for the Panthers. Like, in a losing effort, it's one of the more impressive losing efforts that you're going to find in terms of a Stanley Cup final, because he was able to turn away 40-plus shots. He had to face everything that the Edmonton Oilers were throwing out there, including the kitchen sink, before Leon Draisaitl was able to get that goal at the end of regulation. And Draisaitl, by the way, I mean, this guy has been absolutely tremendous throughout the postseason. He's out close to about plus 450 to be able to win the Conn Smythe Award, so I think that that's very much due. I still think that if the Oilers do end up winning the series, and right now, being up 1-0, they are in very good shape to be able to do so. I still think that's going to be tough to take away from Connor McDavid, but having a game-winning goal in overtime, like we saw out of Leon Draisaitl, that's a good way to be able to start up the debate there. And if we're taking a look at things, I'm not necessarily too much of the world's biggest hockey bettor, but again, I do think that after what we saw in game number one, where the scoring was very rambunctious early, but felt like both of those teams settled down after the first period, I think that might be a little bit more muted on the scoring front. So at that 6.5, I will be looking at the under. With regards to playing a money line, I don't feel too much for either side. I feel like the Panthers should be a very slight underdog. I think that they've got this number relatively correct. If I were to play anything, I'd be looking a little bit more at the in-game options, as it is cashing out with myself, Greg Oops Peterson, right here on Visa, the Sports Betting Network. And how about if you take a look at this game? Because in terms of the game that we saw on Wednesday, if you had the San Diego Padres, this is rough. As for the San Diego Padres, they were able to get up by a count of 5-0 in this one. That was in the top of the fifth inning. From there, the Giants, they're able to rally. They go 1-2-3. One run in the fifth inning, two runs in the sixth inning, and then three runs in the seventh inning to be able to find a way to be able to get the job done by a count of 6-5. So have to give a lot of credit where it is due. And now turning it forward to Thursday, you've got yourself a pretty tight money line. Right around about minus 115, minus 120 is that number on San Francisco. And for the Padres, you're going to find them at a very small plus number, right around about a plus 105. Now, I did set my money line price on the San Francisco Giants, where a minus one turn or greater, I'd be unwilling to lay it, but I need at least plus 110 to be able to take a shot on the Padres. And with regards to Soto, I do think that it's a very intriguing one with a pair of pitchers that they do have their walks issues. For Robbie Ray, 3.8 walks per nine innings this season, and for Dylan Cease, has always had a little bit of a tough time with regards to his command, but I do like the total under, mainly because with Dylan Cease, I think that he's doing for a lot of positivity. He's been having an ERA that's been north of 4.5 this season, but that feeling dependent, it's more around about a 3.20. Now, I will say, a lot of these guys, they do generate a bunch of strikeouts, oftentimes warp their feeling independent numbers, but for Mr. Dylan Cease, he's only been giving up about a home run per nine innings, so it's done a nice job pulling it down there. And for Robbie Ray, throughout his career, about 1.3 home runs allowed per nine innings. Now, I do think that the scenery change to San Francisco, whereas for much of his career, he was pitching out there in both Toronto and Arizona. I think that that's very big for him moving forward, as a lot of those fly balls that would be out in a lot of other ballparks, he's able to get away with a little bit more. And this is a guy in Robbie Ray that does pitch a little bit more to that style. And for the Robbie Ray, he's been just pretty solid this season, coming into his own, showing that Cy Young form from a few seasons ago. But what's been even better for this Giants team has been that bullpen. How about them being number one in the big leagues in terms of bullpen ERA? That's why I was saying in our number one, even though you did see the Giants get down 5-0 in that game, I didn't feel like they were truly out of it, because you knew that you were going to be able to get that good bullpen pitching in. They did end up using some more of the, shall we say, trustworthy guys in the game on Wednesday, as they did have to use up a guy like a Tyler Rogers. Randy Rodriguez was very solid at the closer's role, but you still have Camilo Duvall is going to be all good to go, and it's been very intriguing in terms of what we've been seeing in the rebirth of some of these other guys in the bullpen, like an Eric Miller has been able to give you a sub-2 ERA. He's been able to round back into form, and for the Giants, the lineup can be a little bit hit or miss. You've got a trio of guys that would be able to give you between 10 and 11 home runs this season. Matt Chapman, Wilmer Flores have both been two of those guys, and then additionally, you've been able to have someone like Eloy Ramos, who's now at the leadoff spot, give you those double-figure amount of homers, 355 on base. Love what he's able to bring to the table. And for the Giants, you've had a few guys towards the bottom, like Patrick Bailey was out there on the field on Wednesday, hitting below the middle sign of 200. But for the Padres, feels like outside of a pair of guys in Fernando Tatis Jr. along Gavin Sheets, who have been able to combine for 24 home runs, that it's been a little bit more muted in terms of the actual power numbers of this team. Jake Cronenworth has not necessarily been able to give you much of that. Now, I will say Manny Machado, him being able to hit for about a 300 has been rock solid, but way down with regards to his power as well. So this is one where I take a look at things getting a plus 180 on that Giants run line. It's an offer that I can't refuse just with that big number. And do you think they get a nice pitcher's duel? I'm in on the under. And coming up next, how about if we preview the finals in terms of both the NHL and the NBA on Cashing Out on Visa, the Sports Betting Network.